is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 as we continue live from Peoria, Arizona, Mariner Spring Training Complex. And as we've been doing all week, starting our show off with a bang. And Dave, I think we're always going to have a soft spot in our heart for this guy because I believe we were the first guys he spoke to when he got called up. It was Logan Gilbert, it was Jared Kelnick, and it was this guy. It was the youth movement. He was the true youth of these three, and that would be the one, the only Paul Sewald here with us. How are you, man?
Great to see you guys again.
I think we were the first guys you spoke to, and you made a joke about, yeah, you know, they just wanted to get young, so they brought me up with these guys.
You know, there was all that hype, you know, Jared, Logan, their debut, everything, and wasn't my first rodeo, and I was just excited to get called up in general, and didn't know what was gonna transpire, but it's been pretty good for me so far.
Well, and you've become one of the best closer relief pitchers in baseball. I mean, just in terms of what you do and how often you do it and effectively you do it. How big is that? I mean, I don't know what your expectations were when you got called up. I know you were with the Mets and you had good times, bad times. But this is a different level you've been at since you've been here.
Yeah, more than exceeded by expectations. My expectations were to get called up for a game, and if it didn't go well, get DFA'd kind of thing. It was just, you know, that was just a realistic point of view of what it was, and I had run my time in the National League with the Mets, and they didn't think that I was ready to pitch in the big leagues anymore, and I needed to make major adjustments, and luckily I made them here in Seattle, and it's worked out really well since then.
How was your offseason, Paul?
It was good. It was good. You know, it was a little limited. I had the elbow surgery and the heel surgery, so I didn't do a ton. You know, I got a late start on everything, but I feel great healthy. I feel great. I feel healthy. I feel ready to go. Everything feels good coming into spring training, but a little less adventuring, a little more dad time at home.
Okay.
Were you pitching through pain last year in both those
scenarios?
You know,
the elbow thing was kind of, the heels don't bother me when I pitch at all. That's a running, walking, down the stairs type of thing, so that doesn't bother me when I pitch. The elbow thing would come and go, and that's why it was very frustrating to kind of, you know, wake up one morning and when it bothered me and, you know, be practically numb from the elbow down, and then, you know, I'd go 2.5 months and wouldn't feel it. So, there were days where I couldn't pitch, where maybe the fans maybe were like, well, why isn't Paul pitching? That was just probably one of those days where, you know, I pushed off the bed to go to the bathroom wrong, and that was it. So it wasn't something that really bothered me. It was something that I knew that I could take during the offseason to make sure I didn't miss any time. And the Mariners staff was great about making sure they got everything dialed in and went to see Dr. Meister and got it all fixed, and we're ready to go. No problems at all.
That I think people don't realize that makes it tougher, right? I mean, you're not only working on your game and your pitching and all that, but then you got to rehab something. I mean, it makes it like you put a lot more work in, right?
Yeah.
You see my present? I left
him a present. Ty France left him a present.
Ty, you leave that San Diego State jersey on my locker again, it's going to end up in the garbage where it belongs.
Ty looks very satisfied with himself right now. He looks very satisfied.
So I get in today, and I go to my locker, and I have some garbage sitting on my chair. It's a San Diego State basketball jersey. It is Ty's jersey, so they got it customized for him. But I will never have anything State in my locker. That is garbage, pure garbage.
He seemed very happy, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was so excited to come over here for that. That was awful. Yeah. That was awful. Yes, back to actual baseball stuff. Yeah, you know, it's tough. You know, you're trying to make sure that you're rehabbing, but at the same time trying to prepare for spring training. Luckily, I did them the first week I got done with the season. We flew home and instead of gathering ourselves in the playoffs, flew to Texas and got a surgery, and then flew to Seattle and got surgery and knocked him out. But then, you know, gave me that timeline that I could come into spring training totally ready. And we didn't have this issue where maybe I come in and I'm not ready and then I have to rush into the season. That's how you end up injuring yourself in April or May and missing, you know, an entire season. So just one of those things. It's easy to sacrifice an offseason to make sure that I'm ready.
Yeah. How far apart were the surgeries?
A week. Wow. Yeah. So flew to Texas, got the elbow surgery, flew back. A few days later, flew up to Seattle, got that surgery, and you know, then we got back on the rehab process.
So the guy you liked for your heel, your Achilles, was in Texas?
No, the elbow. Dr. Meister's based out of Texas, and then Dr. Pelto is our team doctor here. Gotcha. With Seattle, and then I came up there to see him for the heels.
Gotcha.
Hey, just talking about your success you've had here, obviously it's great, but with that comes all that expectation, and when you don't perform, fans turn on you because now they expect you got to be great every single time.
Yep.
How have you dealt with that? You and I talked at one point last season about the jackals on Twitter and the stuff they say and all that. Is that something you've kind of come to deal with or expect at this point? If you don't have a brilliant day, they're going to tell you how terrible you are.
It's just one of those things. But I, you know, that's one of the things that I've really worked on with our mental skills coaches here, that I'm going to try and be a little bit better at not really worrying about what other people have to say. It's very funny. This is perfect timing for it. I was watching the WGC match play yesterday, and they're talking about Scottie Scheffler, the number one golfer in the world, and he said, "What anybody else thinks of me is none of my business." And I thought, wow, what a, like, what a great thing for me to hear in a perfect time where I'm trying to work on this. If it's good enough for the number one golfer in the world, it probably should be good enough for me. So whatever anybody on Twitter thinks is none of my business this year.
That's very well said. Man,
he's the number one golfer in the world. He's got his head on his shoulders, and I just thought, what a perfect time for me to hear that.
Right. Hey, lots of guys coming in with new pitches. It seems like more than any other spring that I remember, anyway. But what about you? Are you done with that? Are you just perfecting what you have?
Yeah. Or? So this is the spring training question, and I heard Lance Lynn said it perfectly. I heard him on the radio. He said everyone comes to spring training with a new pitch, and they ditch it 2 weeks into the season. So I thought, well, that's great. That's exactly what I'm doing. I have no new pitches. I'm coming in with the same stuff I've had the last 2 years. When I throw the ball at the top, the fastball at the top of the zone, and sweep the slider, I'm very successful. When I don't do those things, I fall in line just like everybody else does when they struggle. I don't need to come up with a new pitch. I just need to get better at doing what I do really well more consistently. That's what I've come to realize, is that I don't need a splitter, a change. I just need to be really good at the things that I do really well.
Yeah. Was there a different feeling for you after the success last year, playoffs? You beat the Blue Jays. I mean, everybody's talking about the curse is over, finally got that out of the way. Was there like, I can't wait to get back? Was that more so this year, or was this like any other spring?
Definitely. You know, we're all very thankful that we don't have to answer questions about the drought this spring training. That's very nice. You know, there's just a really good group of guys, and I enjoy hanging out with them, and I enjoy playing baseball with them. And, you know, the offseason is kind of like, God, I can't wait to see the guys and get back to Arizona and get going and stuff. And then last year was so weird because we had I felt the same way last year, but we had the lockout, so it was like inconsistent. This is like, all right, February 14th can't come soon enough. And I think everybody was excited to get down here and get to work. And we can't fix last October in March, but, you know, we can march towards this October.
So we were talking to Matt Brash earlier, and he was talking about – we asked him about the bullpen and what some of the people say and things like that.
Don't hold the bullpen responsible for what Matt Brash says on the show.
Okay. No, I just thought it was funny. I actually mentioned your name because I remember you saying that, like, these kids that, like, scream for a ball for, like, 3 hours straight. Of course, now 2.5, so that'll be better.
2 hours and 12 minutes of screaming for a ball.
Yeah,
now.
Yes. Exactly. So much easier to deal with. But, yeah, so your interaction out there, do you – I'm trying to remember because I remember you rated, like, I think Philly was the worst. But
Philly's about the toughest as they get. The security guard there does literally nothing, and it's like, hey, man, it's Philly. We need you pretty good.
Yeah, right.
Yankee Stadium, they're probably the worst, but their security guards are on them. They have that Bronx toughness that actually save us. You know, it's just one of those things. It's, you know, it's part about being in the bullpen, and, you know, it's an easy spot for people to rag on us, but it's, you know, it's funny. It's something. Most of the time, it's funny. The other half, it's like, all right, like, we just have to block that out and focus.
But you're going to get like 30 minutes or whatever it turns out to be less of people screaming at you in the bullpen.
That is true. So, which will be nice.
Good deal.
Yeah. Don't take any guff off those swine.
Yeah.
Now, hey, how does that impact you? Because I think I read a comment or heard a comment from you saying, "Wow, I'm going to have to shave 5 seconds or something off my delivery." I never really viewed you as a guy that was that deliberate.
Yeah.
Like, Diego's a guy who's out there adjusting everything. I thought, well, that's a challenge. But for you, it was a challenge to cut down your time between pitches.
I move slow and deliberate. Diego does a million things, but he does them very fast. So I was actually slowest on the team as far as making sure in between pitches.
I'm surprised by that.
You know, I think part of that is it's the ninth inning and, you know, you're trying to slow the game down. That's what they tell us our whole lives, is slow the game down. Don't let it speed up on you. And now it's like, well, you better speed it up to this point because this is the clock. It's just kind of trying to figure out what exactly is my routine in between pitches. How can I talk to the catchers about getting the sign as quickly as we can so that I can continue my full routine instead of, you know, shake, shake, shake nonsense. And I really haven't thought it's a problem in spring training. It's almost been good the last two outings that I've had a couple of guys on, and kind of the clock has moved a little bit faster on me. The first four times was like, okay, like when I'm pitching well, the clock is literally not an issue at all, and you can use it to your advantage. But it kind of had to work on, like, okay, like, you still have plenty of time, even when you're breathing hard, even when, you know, there's a couple guys on base. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. It's, you know, I will probably have a violation or two at some point during the season. It's just the way it's going to go. But we talked about it. Like, I'd rather go 1-0 than let an inning snowball on me.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the thing that we've talked about. Like, Matt said he was a little concerned, you know, in a outing earlier in spring training. I said, it's fine. You can go 1-0 and still get people out. I've seen you do it before. Don't stress about a violation. It's not going to be the end of the world. Now, you walk a guy, then you give it a double, and you single, and you walk a guy because you feel like the clock's going too much on you. Like, that's a recipe for disaster. Let's just step off, take a ball if you have to, regroup, and get back at it.
I read somebody talking about a suggestion that they do away with that in the ninth inning. And I don't know if baseball will implement that or not, that they've implied they're kind of open to tweaks. I assume that's something you would like if they said, all right, we've got a clock 1-8, but in the ninth inning, in a one-run game or two-run, whatever the stipulation, you'd like that or no?
It's not up to me. They don't ask for my opinion on anything. I don't think anyone's rushing out of the ninth inning in a tight game. Maybe we would like to have that. The game ending on a call earlier in spring training is about the worst thing that could possibly happen with this pitch clock. I would hope that we would put something in play that doesn't happen in a major league game. I can't imagine, you know, facing Shohei in the bottom of the ninth at Angel Stadium with all those people ready to see him, and then he gets called out on a strike three and we're just done with the game. Yeah. That would be a recipe for disaster for Major League Baseball. We'll see what they do. You know, they made a couple of tweaks and that was not one of them, so I don't know if they're going to do anything. And I'm fully prepared to pitch, you know, in that 15 and 20 second clock, whether they make an adjustment or not.
I think last time we asked you about Diego, you said we all have our things. And, you know, as far as what the things you do. But you have the thing where you do the adjust your jersey. Is that you have to get
rid of that? No, just getting the jersey away from my arm. If I could just pitch with just, like, a big T-shirt, that would be, like, totally fine for me. But, you know, I have to wear the uniform, and it's essentially – it's not, you know, a specific thing. It's just as I have to try and, you know, free my arm up of the jersey. If I could just wear a sleeve of jersey, that would be perfect.
Yeah. Okay, but that doesn't take much time, right?
It seems like it's taking about a half a second. So I think we're okay.
It'll
with
be
that.
Okay.
I think we'll be okay with that.
You can keep it.
Yeah, yes,
you can keep
barely.
It. Hey, you talked about wanting to get back with the guys, and we've said this repeatedly all week. Every time we have somebody sit down, we speak with them, they get up and leave, and we look at each other and go, man, what a great guy. What a great dude. And that's not lip service for the listeners or anything. This is a team I've covered for years, and you've been here for a number of years now. Does this feel like maybe the best group? It just feels like one after another. It's just a quality group of guys. It truly is.
I like to tell people that aren't part of this organization that, like, from John Stanton down, this is just a really good organization that doesn't hire or sign people that are schmucks. Like, they just don't do it. From the clubhouse attendants to people in the food room to the coaching staff to the play, like, we just don't have people that are hard to deal with, and that's what helps this entire culture work. It's a fun atmosphere to be a part of.
Now, you said you're spending a little bit more time at home. You're a dad, right?
Yep.
How's that going?
Chloe's great. She's crazy. You know, she's 19 months, so she's moving as much as she can, talking as much as she can. She starts to have her own emotions, which are fun. But, you know, it's great. Especially in spring training, you're not going to the games and you're not pitching. A lot of the time you can spend at home. And it was really nice. Spring training's a really good, you know, lead into the season where we're gone for 10 days straight, or, you know, I'm only home for 3 or 4 hours before I have to go to the field, sort of thing. So definitely enjoy that dad time, and we'll have to make the most of it when we can during the season, but it's a lot harder.
Yeah, I don't remember encouraging my kids to walk, because, you know, once they start walking,
everybody told us that, but she figured out how to do it. So
I guess
just like everybody, she figured out how to do it, and now she runs everywhere.
Does that place a different urgency on your career? You're like, wow, I got a child now. I got a family. You want to provide for them. You want to make this last as long as possible, I assume. Does it change your mentality at all?
Obviously, you know, everyone's lying if they tell you that they don't care about making money to play this game. Like, that's not the only reason we play, but it is very nice that they pay us to play baseball. And obviously, you want to make as much as you can for your family. But I think my career took a turn in the positive when we found out we were pregnant. And, like, I just kind of released that sort of, like, That's my main priority no matter what. And, like, baseball is very important to me, but it's not the most important thing in the entire world. And, you know, if I pitch poorly, she doesn't care when I come home. Like, I'm still dad, whether I struck out three in the ninth for a save or blew the save. So that kind of gave me a little bit extra perspective and kind of lets me release what happens at the field when I'm at the field and not bringing it home with me. So I think, you know, there's a pattern there that has worked in my favor, is that, you know, once we had Chloe, it's been a lot better.
You're in Vegas, right?
Yep. Born and raised.
That's right. You're a dirty Gorman Gale.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's it seems like that place is just exploding. Like everybody is moving to Vegas. I have lots of friends up in Seattle that are like going to buy retirement homes down there.
Yeah, I mean, non-state income tax state, so people from California that realized, you know, they don't have to work from the office anymore from COVID have really, you know, moved and blew up our housing market. So we kind of wish it was still small like it used to be, but it's fun. You know, we have the professional sports teams now, and it's really starting to turn into a major metropolitan city. So it's crazy. It's not the same city that I grew up in, but it's great.
Did you tell him why you're calling him a dirty Gorman Gale?
Yeah.
Does he know why you're saying that?
You know, Bob.
We've talked about it. Reno High School, right?
Yeah, I don't like to bring up my my high school and the fact that we won a state championship, but we lost to you guys.
I won three of them while I was there.
Really?
Yeah. They had never won until I got there, and then you know,
and they haven't won since.
You obviously
they've won every year since.
Okay. what was your view of Wooster High when you were out there?
He can be honest. No, that was up in Reno. Right?
When I think of Wooster, I think of when we were in Little League and the like region or the state championships were in Wooster when I was 12, and that was where we went for. And then we won, and then we got to go to San Bernardino, which is the regionals right before you go to Williamsport.
Okay. Yeah, this is Wooster High School in Reno.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where it is, Bob. We're state champions in 1981.
Yeah. Okay. He never says that. That's weird that it came up. Hey, just quickly, you talked about, you know, coming home, whether you save a game, you blow a save. Are you somebody that carries, if you blow a save, which everybody does, do you carry it with you? Is it hard to just let that go and I'm going the next night? Because you kind of have to have a short memory.
I know fans are shocked, but it actually matters more to us than it matters to the fans that we win or lose. I know that's crazy to think about. I mean, it hurts. Not selfishly, but like the fact that I feel like I could let down my teammates where, you know, they get a 6-4 lead and I end up blowing it. It's kind of like, I just, like, when we think about the game one of the ALCS, like, I don't really care if bad things happen to me, but like the fact that I felt like I blew it for our team was like the worst part of that. That's like what's stuck with me since then. It's like, gosh, what could our team battled so hard? Like, and then for you to not do your job. But like as a reliever, I'd probably have a chance of pitching the very next game. Yeah. So that's the hardest part of the job maybe is trying to like block out the good or bad and just come back to the park the next day and get back to work. Whether I blew a save or had the save, I probably have the same opportunity the next night. And if I let it snowball and turn into a bad month, that's when we start to have to make changes.
Sorry, I'm going to ask about the culture of the bullpen again. So, where do you rank as far as giving people crap? Like, and who are the guys you like to?
One down there doesn't give or receive a little slack every once in a while. That's just part of the group. If you can't, you won't blend in our bullpen very well. You got to be able to give and receive a little bit that, you know, kind of keep people on their toes. I would say probably at the top of the giving, but I'm probably at the top of the receiving as well. So now that Swanee's not here, I won't give nearly as much, and I probably won't receive nearly as much. You know, he's just easy to pick on, and you know he likes to dish it back.
Yeah, but you took a shot at Brash, so you got a new target there. Maybe
he's the young guy; it's the easiest. Yeah. He's the easiest target.
Now, quickly, was it you that told us about Diego when he first got here? He was like no habla.
He tried to pretend that he doesn't speak English, and he speaks perfect English.
And he told you said something like, then he tells me a story that lasted four innings or something like that.
In perfect English. I was like, this guy's just straight up lied to me.
I love that.
But that's, you know, that's Diego, and you know, now that we know each other and get a little closer, it's just he's an amazing teammate, and he's just been such a great person for Munoz to bounce things off of. The language barrier is real, no matter how well we try to work on it. The fact that Diego is a Latin player with a lot of experience has been maybe the best thing possible for Munoz here, and it's been amazing. And you know, everyone knows that we need Mooney as much as anybody on this team. So it's been great, and Diego's just a great guy all the way.
Paul, we love that you're here, man. Since you've come to Seattle, it's always been fun talking to you, and obviously watching you out there on the field. And we wish you nothing but the best. As always, look forward to talking to you during the season.
I appreciate it. I enjoy 90 win seasons too.
Yes,
let's do it again.
Thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There you go, Paul Sewald. Always love talking to that guy. Just a lot of fun. I love that story. Yeah, he didn't speak English, and then he told me a story that lasted 4 or 5 innings.
By the way, veteran move. He put it down gently,
so gentle.
Some guys slam it down,
slam it down, and run off. Appreciate it, Paul.
Appreciate it. We'll
thanks, Paul.
We'll talk to you in a couple months. We'll say, like, hey,
pitch.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah, that story is hilarious, though. He tells me a story. Last four innings. It's so perfect English.
It's a good weapon to have, right? Like, I don't know if I want to let these people know if I can speak
very
English
convenient.
Or not.
Yeah. You can just look at somebody like...
No habla.
Okay. Yeah. I don't get what they're saying, but hey, Paul Sewald, another guy, impossible not to like, such a great personality. He's been so huge for this team since he's been called, since he came over in the trade and then called up when Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick. It was a trifecta. People forget that, but the three came up at the same time.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, that been very important to this. I mean, we talk about those three guys probably as much as anyone. When I asked him, where do you rank? And he's like, he's very articulate, very sharp. I got to believe he's the guy that's giving it to everybody.
Yeah, and he's good at taking it as well. He's got a good sense of humor. So there you go. Our thanks to Paul Sewald. Let's take two.
Luis Castillo will make his final start of spring today, and he was also today named the Mariners' opening day starter. It'll be his third opening day start, 2019 and 2021. He made the start for the Reds. And the M's opponent that night, the Guardians, also announced their starter. Shane Bieber will make his fourth straight opening day start for Cleveland.
Oh, Shane Bieber's in for a long night, by God. Hopefully he's quite a pitcher, Shane Bieber. So we'll see. I cannot wait. We will be out there, by the way, at opening day. We'll be outside the gate by the mitt with the hole in it out there. So we'll hopefully the weather. I haven't looked at the weather forecast, Dave. Hopefully it's nice.
What do you call that statue again?
That's the Russ Davis Memorial.
Okay.
Yeah.
Poor Russ Davis.
I know. He's probably a heck of a guy.
The hole in the mitt.
It was a rough time. But yeah, that's. I cannot wait to see that matchup.
Crazy NCAA tournament action last night. It continues today, by the way. The reason that San Diego State jersey was on Paul Sewald's chair, we were trying to figure that out before he came out here. So thanks for that explanation. They play today. They play Alabama. So Ty France dropped that off. They play at 3:30, and you have some other good matchups. But how about last night? We were watching two of these classic games. First, it was Kansas State beating Michigan State in overtime, 98-93. And then the nightcap. Gonzaga nearly blew what seemed like a controllable lead late in the game. A dramatic three by Julian Strother and go on to beat UCLA 79-76.
UCLA, man, they just could not hit a field goal.
Well, they went over 9 minutes without a run.
I think it was like close to 12.
Was it
12? Yeah, it was painful. At one point, it did reach over 11.
I mean, if they were just mediocre during that 12-minute stretch, they win the game. Right?
I mean, very painful to watch. Oh.
And I thought for sure they were going to work it into Timmy at the end there. The guy takes the three-pointer. He's like, yeah, we practice that all the time. He usually makes it.
You and I talked about it last night. That's one of those shots. If he misses, people are going, why in the hell would you do that? You still had 12 seconds on the clock, and you're firing it from the logo.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally like three steps over half court. Sinks it. Everybody's a genius. It's what we practice. And it just, wow. That was a huge moment. And Thumb was going ballistic.
He was just doing gymnastics
on the couch.
He almost took me out with his foot at one point. And I was like, oh easy. I was going to say, Mike was so calm.
The problem is, because our bracket, which everyone cares about who's listening, but our bracket competition, I think I was the rare one that had UCLA in the Final Four. And we had like five people pick Gonzaga, including the Canadian we've talked about, Brent Stecker, who has Gonzaga going far. So to watch UCLA blow a 13-point lead, very aggravating. To then watch them come back and take the lead, you think you've rescued something, and then all of a sudden it's just gone.
A
terrific shot. That shot will live in NCAA tournament lore for a long time.
Those are some great games yesterday, though. Kansas State, who's the guy inside that has the dog? I'm trying to remember, but anyway, I walked past his office. He's standing on the couch. He's got one foot on the arm of the couch and one on his desk. And I'm like, I wonder what, I guess he's a Kansas State grad. So
he was fired up
over time.
To say the least, he was fired up. All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up tonight is the final start of spring for Luis Castillo. We'll break down what we're looking for coming up with Wyman and Bob. Live from the Mariners Spring Training Complex here in Peoria, Arizona, this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to Paul Sewald, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys missed that conversation, you'll definitely want to check that out. Very engaging guy. Just a lot of fun to talk to him. Just like everybody else we've spoken to here throughout the week. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710, live from the Mariner Spring Training Complex. Coming up on the show, I don't think I told anybody because we had Paul sitting here waiting. So Paul Sewald was with us. Justin Hollander, Mariners GM. I'm so used to saying Jerry DePoto, GM, Justin Hollander, assistant GM, but he's the GM now. So he will join us at 3 o'clock.
Awesome.
Matt Brash will join us at 4 o'clock, Dave's new favorite, and people will be, you know, crossing their fingers you don't jinx them and all that stuff they were saying to you on our text line. You know, you've got a lot of power, Dave, with your comments.
I was just as curious about Matt Brash as the normal person that heard. He threw a legendary MLB best, whatever it was, his slider.
We'll play that comment for him and get his reaction to it.
Yeah,
see what he thinks.
That's a good idea.
So that comes up at 4 o'clock today. Our host here in Arizona, Shannon Dreyer, also our Mariners insider, will join us at 4:30, and then Jared Kelnick is kind of tentative. Yes,
yeah,
we'll see. He's, you know, thumb's gonna have to go in there and wrestle him, drag him to the set, see what we can get done here.
Just hoping he has a good BP session. Then he'll be more apt to come on.
Yeah, so, yeah. They've got BP going till 5 o'clock, I think, right? Or just short of 5 o'clock. So if it happens, it'll be in the 5 o'clock hour.
Yeah. Sorry. Weren't you in there when he was taking batting practice and he said it was loud?
It was sounded like just shotgun shells coming off of his bat. It just sounded like he squared every ball up. You're in a batting cage. It doesn't take long for the ball to hit something. So they all look squared up to me. You don't have distance to go, right. Wow, well, he really launched that thing. But, yeah, he looks quiet at the plate. He looks comfortable. And it was his spring has been outstanding. And it was quite a session in there in the cage. So hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with Jared Kelnick, who most people are really interested in what he does this season. Our coverage of Mariner Spring Training is presented by Alaska Airlines and Kitsap Credit Union. We talked about Luis Castillo being named the Mariners opening day starter. He is going to get his last start of the spring coming up here. And we've seen some really dominant performances by George Kirby, by Robbie Ray. Haven't really seen that from Castillo. And again, this is where you qualify it. That's spring. They're working on stuff, Dave. But he's had 4 starts. He's pitched 12 innings. He's given up 13 hits, 9 runs, 7 of them earned, 12 strikeouts, 4 walks. Not great numbers, if we're being honest, but it is spring. And these are guys that he's one of those guys historically who's a slow starter. We had him in the middle of the year come over here, so we didn't get a look at, you know, opening day Luis and early season Luis Castillo. We got him after he warmed up, so to speak. But any concern with you?
No, not at all. And that's just one where, I mean, I don't even know if he's throwing everything he has or his hardest stuff. You know, I don't think this even matters to him. But on the other hand, I mean, you look at what Robbie Ray, and again, I think we're cherry picking, right? I mean, some things we pay attention to, except for, I think everybody agrees, at least we do, on Jared Kelnick.
Yeah.
That what he's done is really good, because there's something that's different. He's done something different. But, yeah, I don't worry about Luis Castillo at all. And then, you know, by way of comparison, I can see why everybody's just raving about Robbie Ray, because they both have pitched the same number of innings, 12, but he's only given up 1 earned run. And he's got
how many strikeouts?
21 strikeouts.
And how many innings again?
Yeah, 12.
12 innings, 21 strikeouts.
Yeah, and Castillo, same number of innings, and he's got 12. But, yeah, it's just, I mean, Robbie Ray is at a, I think he's taken it up to a different level. But I do think Luis Castillo, I don't worry about it, but it is kind of a mystery, you know, what I'll be very anxious, not anxious, but I'll be looking forward to seeing how he does in his first outing.
Well, anxious isn't necessarily a negative. I'm anxious to get there. I can't wait. You say anxious, Dave.
Okay. I'm anxious, Bob.
I'm anxious to see him, too. I can't wait. Can't wait. But, yeah, it's, you know, these numbers you can pick apart and you know, point them in one direction or the other, good or bad. But, yeah, listen, I don't think they say, yeah, you're our opening day starter. We're going to run you out there opening day because, you know, we're so concerned with what you do or don't do during the spring. I think there's a certain level of confidence. And Jerry himself has talked about him and said he's a guy who's just
takes some time to find his groove in the season. That's who he is. We just didn't see it last year because he wasn't here. Right. So, you know, we'll see what happens on opening day, see how sharp he looks. I know velocity was down and is slowly increasing here in spring, and he's, you know, obviously not trying to burn himself out right out of the gate in spring to prove anything. He's a seasoned veteran at this point, so he's well established what he does well and doesn't do well. So, yeah, this is going to be – I think it's going to be amazing to have him here to start the year to get a full complement, if you will, of Luis. And this pitching staff, we were talking about it with Shannon before we left today, and we'll talk to her at 4:30, but just the idea that this is a, you know, depending on which publication you look at or who you listen to, that this rotation somehow ranks 18th in Major League Baseball or 16th, and I think Lefko was looking at a couple different ones. It's just, you know, some of that is me not, but it's just hard to imagine looking at this 1-5 going, yeah, boy, I wish they had this. You'd always like to have a Cy Young 1-5, but how could they be that low? Because I feel so confident about this rotation if they can stay healthy.
And I think Greg Amsinger is the one that told us that he thinks it's underrated, their starting rotation. So, yeah, it'll be cool to see. And I want to say when he, yeah, his first game with as a Mariner, 6 2/3, he had 8 strikeouts.
Was it the Yankees?
Yep, it was against the Yankees. Yeah, so he started on fire, and I think he gave up a home run in that game, but still only 3 earned runs, and that was on the road, and that was a big win for them.
Yeah, it's he's going to be an absolute key to what they are expecting to accomplish this year, which is obviously a return to the playoffs. And to go, you got to go further. You got to take that next step. And you know, you took it last year. It was a big step. You got to the postseason. You won a series on the road against a very, very potent offense in the Toronto Blue Jays, and you played a tooth and nail just to the death almost with the Houston Astros, 18-80, the whole thing. I mean, you were right there in it, so you got to get through that next one, man. That's the expectation, and he is such a massive part of it.
I was just looking at his first start at home was also against the Yankees 6 days later. That was the game that went 13 innings, and they won 1-0. And you're like,
what was his? Do you have his first start of the season last year with the Reds? I'm just curious because we're talking about him as a slow starter. It takes a bit to find his rhythm. Do you have that?
4 2/3. They won. Gave up 3 hits and had 5 strikeouts.
How many runs?
Gave up 3 okay. runs.
Yeah, 4-2. Yeah, so that's.
But yeah, and 4 2/3. Yeah, it's. And he didn't. I mean, he hit the ground running here with what 2 8 inning performances, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 6 2/3, then 8. But, yeah, I mean, the 1-0 game, I just remember thinking, you know, how Scott Service always talks about it's starting pitching and defense. And that's absolutely came true.
They got that. All right. Coming up, one last Arizona edition of What's Bugging Bob? What's Bugging Dave? What's Bugging Lex? What's Bugging Us? We'll unveil that. Coming up next is Bob and Wyman and Bob, excuse me, from live from Mariners Spring Training Complex.
Bob.
I wanted to change it. I was trying to slip it under the radar there, and you caught me. We're live at the Mariners Spring Training Complex here in Peoria, Arizona. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What's Bugging Bob?
It could be traffic.
Hey.
It might be Angels fans.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
And it's definitely Stephen A. Smith.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
It's time to find out what's Bugging Bob.
Programming note, Mariners GM Justin Hollander will join us at 3 o'clock, so make sure you stay tuned for that. I can tell you what's bugging me down now, Dave, is my crappy memory. I can't remember what I was specific on something the other day, and I was with Lefko, and I said, oh, let's make sure we talk about this. This is what's bugging me, and neither one of us can remember it.
Well, I mean, look.
And it was emphatic, too. I felt good about it.
I think I just got roped into a made-up conversation. That's an indictment on my memory now, too.
Well, I'm telling you, for that part I remember. The interaction is absolutely true. What it was about, I cannot remember, and that's bugging the hell out of me.
What,
right
what can you be bothered by?
Well, I know.
You're down here, it's sunny, it's beautiful, we're doing shows out here.
What Bob forgot because he had to wake up extremely early today. So it's been a long day for you already.
Oh, yeah, 9:30 hit. Huh?
Yeah, man, I had to wake up at 9:29, but it was Yeah, I cannot remember. He's going, where were we? And I'm like, I think we were at the house, but I can't remember. I remember, oh, I got one. Let's do this when we do it on Friday, and then it's gone. And yeah. He forgot. I forgot. And I'm bothered by it, Dave.
Yeah, well, we could also throw in there as a candidate, Adam Ray crashing our house and trying out his new routine on us, basically. that kind of kept us up a little bit. But, yeah, there's nothing to be bothered by, right?
Adam was bugging. You didn't like his material?
No, I'm just joking. I just text him, ask him if he's listening. I'm going to take a shot at him. I like to provoke him, and then he turns it on you, kind of like Thumb does with him, you know, a little bit provoking.
I felt like he was directing most of his material to gauge Thumb's reaction. He would, Mike. He was doing that. He was like playing to you. He was like, and then he would say, I like that reaction. You kind of bought in, and then you thought, and then he was kind of analyzing each reaction that Mike had, and it was.
Well, he knows you and I are going to laugh no matter what. I laugh the second I see him.
Yeah, there are people like that. We have texters that will text in and like, oh, you guys give him courtesy laughs, and that's not funny. Well, it's all subjective, and there are certain people that you meet or you see in your life that no matter what they do or say, they just hit a button. You laugh. They just make me laugh, and he's just one of those guys, even when he's not doing his material, that you'll just have a conversation with him. You end up cracking up. I just find him extremely funny, and if other people don't, okay, that's fine, but yeah, this is not an act. It's not an act with him. He doesn't need courtesy laughs. He'd be insulted by such a thing.
I only give courtesy laughs to Lefko.
Yeah, well, he needs them.
See what I did there, Mike?
We got to build him up. We got to give him confidence, so that's necessary.
Direct
got confidence.
Direct some of your mean texts to Lefko.
That's right. That's the other thing.
I don't know why.
We forgot to tell people. Obviously, we got the big guest list and everything. We got Justin Hollander coming up at 3 o'clock, but we do have mean text. We have the Arizona edition coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. So mean text 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. So just get creative. You've got time. We'll do them at 5:45 today. We never stray from those. Doesn't matter where in the country we are.
By the way, I heard we might get some guest submissions to mean text.
Oh, is that right?
Some like live texting in, seeing how we react.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
I don't know what was bugging me.
I don't know if that conversation happened.
I will say drivers out here are very deliberate.
Yeah.
They are in no hurry whatsoever. They're just seem to be enjoying the day. And, oh, it's green. I'll get to the next one. I'm fine here. Everybody behind me. We were in the Starbucks line. Remember, there was a person or a couple, I couldn't tell, in front of us. And the line was long. And then it started moving. Person in front of us, they looked like they were looking at their phone. They were leaning over in each other's seat, and Dave was surprisingly composed. I thought he was going to lay on the horn or maybe give him a little nudge, because it wasn't like a split second thing. We sat there for what, maybe a minute?
Well, I don't think, there was somebody up at the counter. I mean, if it was delaying us, I'd have laid on the horn.
Well, there's people behind us, though, waiting to order is the thing.
What about the left turn people?
We talked about that already.
They don't pull into the intersection.
When the light's green, you can go out into the intersection, and that way when it turns, a lot of people don't take advantage of that. That's part of, that your driver's test. So, yeah, I don't know why that doesn't happen.
You think you pass a driver's test right now?
Me?
Yeah, like the written part. I don't know if I would, or the written part. The driving part, certainly. But
yeah,
I can't remember the questions or if I know exactly what the rules are.
I don't remember having to study for it, though.
Yeah, I don't know if I did. I think I read. Don't they? They give you a little booklet, or they used to.
Yeah. And well, let me ask you this: this might bother you? Did you also, when you went on at 9:30, have to wait for like 6 minutes as Brock Huard sat?
No,
there
in fact, they remarked about that. They said last time we had a member of the show on, you and I, me and Ryan Roland Smith sat here talking about the sun god, sun king, whatever they call Ryan's dad, and we were yammering on about that. And then he said, "We're not going to do that this time, though." And
okay,
so yeah.
I was on there for like, hi guys, and then Brock starts in on this whole dialogue, and then they kept going back and forth, and it was like 6 minutes in. I was like, hey guys, do you need me, or can I go back to bed?
Yeah. I'm glad I woke up for all of this nonsense.
It was funny. No. It was funny. It was good stuff.
Yeah, good. It was good. They had Brady on today, so I was on with Brock and Brady, and the, it, as you might imagine, Dave, he's very interested in my my routine, my cleanliness.
And
yeah. If I treated the house like a hotel, which in a hotel, the first thing I do is I pinch with two fingers the comforter, and I just take it and throw it on the floor. And it's never to be touched again. And then I never touch the floor with my bare feet in a hotel. Never. Always socks or flip-flops.
I think I'm that way. I think it's got. I've become more like persnickety because of Bob.
So it probably would be bugging you if you had just a bunch of people sitting on your bed getting it all dirty, and then you had to.
I got to tell you, I wouldn't have liked that. No. I would have been uncomfortable with last night.
Somebody slapped me for using that word persnickety.
Persnickety. Yeah. That sounds like somebody would say, "Oh my word!"
My mom would say,
"Is that your toilet paper word of the day?"
Oh, David, you're so persnickety.
What does that mean?
Yeah, it means like particular and sort of
snickety.
Yeah, it's kind of like you. Kind of like you, Bob.
It just means me.
Yeah.
It just means Bob.
Placing too much emphasis on trivial or minor details, comma, fussy.
There's no such thing as too much emphasis.
There it is,
There's no such thing
over there.
No, I disagree. No such thing as too much emphasis.
Now you got something to be bothered about.
I'm bothered by that.
Lefko and I are calling you that.
Brock was very intrigued about, do you wash your clothes there? Do you wash your clothes at the hotel laundromat? I'm like, no.
Yeah,
because I feel like I'm putting them back in a suitcase that isn't totally clean. And then that suitcase is on the plane with all those other dirty suitcases. And mine isn't a hard shell one like yours. Mine is, soft, and it's breathable, which means it's getting germs in there. And so, all those clothes get washed the second I get home.
Yeah.
And the clothes, by the way, Dave, that I wear on the plane, I will never sit on my bed or a couch or a chair in my house if I wore these pants and shirt on a plane. No, sir.
Wow.
How many people have sat in that plane seat?
I never even think about that.
You're in there for a couple of hours. Yeah. You're moving around. You're rubbing on the seat. And then it's on your pants and clothes. And
I think it's like what Seawald said about it's your job to not pay attention to those things.
I can't do it.
What did he say? It was something about the golfer.
What anybody else thinks of me is none of my business.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a good one, though. But, those clothes go immediately into the washer get in the front door.
Do you double wash them?
Well, no, they just get washed. They just immediately get taken off and put into the dirty clothes, and then I'll put something else on. Usually I like to take a shower. I feel after I've been in the germ tube for a couple of hours, it's time to get
germ
clean.
Tube. That's what my daughter calls it, a fart tube, basically.
She's your daughter, so of course it went right there. Yeah. All right, coming up, we've seen him around here all week. In fact, I saw him just a couple of minutes ago, but the Mariners GM, that is Justin Hollander, will join us next here live from Peoria, Arizona, Mariners Spring Training Complex. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.